Let me give you another picture. This next picture is, I think, an accurate representation of what my experience was week in and week out whenever I preached through the book of Revelation a few years ago. I would show up on Monday, I would open up the scriptures, and I would start to try to stay on the line, and this is what I experienced. This is what the book of Revelation felt like, looked like. What is this? It's a mural of what? Ronald McDonald? I mean, I see what you're saying. That ain't no Ronald McDonald like I ever seen. Is some baby Ronald McDonald?
Zombie.
Another zombie. Where are y'all seeing these zombies? See, that's a good point. I mean, I'm not seeing it. And y'all might experience that this week through the small groups. People seeing all kinds of different things up in Revelation. I see that monkey that I'm used to clanging those cymbals, but he has gotten changed by the dragon or something. He's beastly. What's the focus? Do any of these different, weird, kind of familiar but distorted images, do they come into focus? It's hard to tell what it is. Is it this huge baby with a phone about to punch us? Is it the wrestler? Revelation is tough. Staying on the line is tough. Seeing the line in Revelation is tough. And you know what? The book of Revelation tells us this book may be different than other books. So even the attempt to see the line and stay on the line may be different in the book of Revelation. Just turn to Revelation chapter 1. And we're going to, I'll read verses 1 through 3, and then I want you to look at, just discuss with your partner, what does Revelation, from the very beginning, tell us about this book that we're studying this week? Revelation chapter 1, verse 1. The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show to his servants the things that must soon take place. He made it known by sending his angel to his servant, John, who bore witness to the word of God and to the testimony of Jesus Christ, even to all that he saw. Blessed is the one who reads aloud the words of this prophecy, and blessed are those who hear and who keep what is written in it, for the time is near. All right, with your partner for about a minute, just make a few observations. What do we learn from the very beginning in Revelation about what we should expect out of this book? Take a minute with your partner. All right. What are we told to expect out of the book of Revelation from the very first words?
Blessing.
Yeah, blessing. Where do you see that?
Blessed is the one who reads aloud the words of this prophecy, and blessed are those who hear.
Yeah, blessed are those who read, blessed is the one who reads, blessed are the ones who hear, but also don't just hear, but keep what is written. So yet again, like our job, if we're to preach this book, is to see what this book is saying, because the people who we're preaching to, the only way they get blessed is if they hear what is actually there. They're going to need to hear what's there in order to keep it. We want them to be blessed. So there's a great reward if we stay on the line. What else? What do we expect from Revelation? Where do you see that?
Verse 1, which God gave him to show his servants. At the end of verse 2, John
Okay.
We're reading something, but we're seeing things.
Yes. Yeah. And into verse 1, there's this idea of make known. Make known, like literally a signify. So the way Revelation makes things known is different than the way that Romans makes things known. This is meant to make things known, but it makes known through symbols and signs. They're images that carry the truth in Revelation. Good. Also, verse 1, it is a revelation, which means this is meant to be clear. I mean, I didn't always feel that way, particularly before I got over the fear of preaching it. But it is meant to be clear. It's not meant to be confusing. It's not meant to be discouraging. God has a revelation here. Anything else? It's also prophecy. This is prophetic. It's taught through symbols. It's meant to be clear. If you add in verse 4, it's a letter. It's written kind of, it's a series of letters. It's written to churches. These are the expectations we should have of the book of Revelation from the very beginning. And yet we can recognize from the very beginning, this is going to be different than other books that we're used to preaching through. And yet, no matter how difficult it is, the job is the same. We need to stay on the line. In order to stay on the line, though, we need a sequence. We need a sequence. So we want to move from the book of Revelation to our people today, but we can't go directly to them. The first move we have to make is toward them then, the original audience and what they understood. And to do that, we're going to talk about structure, the step of preparation, structure, and how that helps us to understand what it meant to them back then. Let me put before you two professions that have a relationship to structure. Archaeology and architecture. Archaeologist has a relationship to structure, how things are built. An architect has a different relationship to how something's built. What are the differences? What is an archaeologist's relationship with structural things?
One uncovers and the other designs.
Excellent. One uncovers, the other designs, creates. Structure is more like the archaeologist, not the architect. The step of structure is not about designing, crafting, creating. It's not about alliteration. It's about digging. It's about discovering. It's about trying to find what has been there for thousands of years. Let me give you the principle of structure. We must discover the structure of a text to discern its emphasis. We must discover the structure of a text to discern its emphasis. Now, there are things we do even before this step. Before we even take the step of structure, I do want to acknowledge that we need to do a couple of things. Before we discover the structure, we need to obviously observe the passage. We need to read it. But there's another thing we need to do before we can discover the structure. We need to ask a question. And you need to do this. We all need to do this every week if we're going to take this step. The first question of structure is, what text type am I dealing with? What text type am I dealing with? Is this text narrative, poetry, or discourse? Just very simply speaking, those are the three types of texts in the Bible: narrative, stories, poetry, discourse, or speeches. Okay? We need to ask the question, what text type is this? Now, what text type, just from your work already in Revelation, what text type do we have in Revelation? Someone said yes. Why would you say yes? That's not what I asked. I said, which type did we have? Was this Jim? Who was it? It was Ryan. What text type do we have in Revelation? All three of them. We have stories. We have songs, poetry. We have speeches, discourse. So this is tough to even answer this question when we're going through the book of Revelation. The easiest thing is like chapters 2 and 3. That's clearly discourse, these letters. It's easier to answer this question. But the rest of it just is kind of, it's mainly a mix of stories and speeches. It's mainly a mix of drama and discourse. And so we're mainly going to be using tools that relate to those two text types. But once we have read the passage and even answered that question, then we're ready to take a few steps, general steps we should take whenever we're looking for structure. And I'm just going to give them to you. I'm going to give them to you right now, and we're going to work with them, okay? Three steps to finding structure. Number one, discover the parts of the passage. Number two, deliberate over the relationships of the parts. Number three, discern the emphasis. Three steps to finding structure. So number one, discover the parts. How do we do it? Well, I told you that you want to ask the what type of text is this? And I want to give you the options for us. What tools would we use to discover the parts of discourse passage or poetic passage or a narrative passage? I've given you different tools. I'm just listing them just so that you have them. But we're going to work on some specific ones in the book of Revelation. But you notice, if you're in discourse, you're going to look for structure. You're going to discover the parts with a different tool: grammar, flow of ideas, repetition. Those are going to be useful in the book of Revelation. And another one that's going to especially be useful is the text type of narrative and the tools that belong in there. When you're in narrative, you want to consider the tool of plot to discover the parts of the passage. In my experience in Revelation, I didn't use that as much in other, like I would in other passages that are narrative. You want to consider characters. That was helpful to me in Revelation. Scene changes by a change in place or a change in time. You want to discover the parts, and you use these strategies to discover the parts. But then remember, the second step is to deliberate over the relationships. Even once you've got the parts, you need to deliberate over relationships. So here's another picture. What's that a picture of? Oh my gosh. We're going to keep going. Let's just ride this out, this zombie business. I don't know what I'd be doing up here. Y'all keep seeing zombie. It's hard to tell what in the world this thing is. Just a bunch of pieces of something. Now, if I do this, if I do this, and that, and that. You see what I'm doing? Ooh, this is a weird looking leg. Sorry about that. That's a zombie. That's a zombie left leg business that happens when you become a zombie. All right, now what is it? Yeah. All right, this is really, really important. This is really, really important. When you're going through your worksheets, and when you get out of the lab and you're actually doing this in real life, and you are convinced you should stay on the line, and structure's a big part of it, you haven't seen the structure just because you've seen the pieces. Any more than you've seen the man because you've seen the parts of the man. It's the relationship of the parts that we're looking for. So deliberate over the relationships. Consider, like, how do these verses in this one part of the passage, how do they relate to the other parts? How are they alike? How are they different? Is this a relationship of like three parts and it's a series? Is it a progression? Is it contrast? Is it cause and effect? Like, think through the relationship of the parts, because you need to do that if you're going to discern the emphasis. And this really is the payoff. This is the first indicator toward, like, on your worksheets, number three, the author's main point. This is revealing a focus, a burden. It shouldn't be long. So your emphasis, I mean, even try to make it as simple as possible, not two sentences, but maybe 3 to 5 words. What is this passage really doing that I've seen just by observing the parts and their relationships to one another? All right, we're going to practice this in the book of Revelation. Everyone turn to Revelation chapter 6. Revelation chapter 6. We want to practice this step of structure and discovering it, deliberating over the relationships, and then discerning an emphasis. Revelation chapter 6. Would somebody stand and loudly read Revelation chapter 6 for all of us? And I'm going to give you a tool, and it's from the area of discourse, of repetition. So someone stand. Go ahead and do that. It'll be helpful if one out of 70 of you is willing to read God's word aloud for all of us. What's your name?
Chad.
Chad, bless you. Revelation chapter 6. All of us listen for a repeated term.
Whole thing.
Whole thing.
Okay. Now I watched when the Lamb came, and who can stand?
Amen. Thank you. Okay, what did you hear the repeated phrase? No? Yes, what was it? When he opened the seal. Very good. Take a moment with your partners and discover the parts. Take step number one in finding structure. Discover the parts of the passage just using the phrase, he opened the seal. How would you break up the passage into sections? Take a moment with your partner and break up the passage. All right, step one, that's all we're doing right now. Step one, we're using a discourse strategy of repetition. We noticed that in our observing of the passage. There's this repetition of he opened the seal. So now we're just using that tool to discover the parts of the passage. How many parts are there? Six parts. All right, where's the first part? What verses? 1 and 2, and this is the first seal, right? So this is, we'll see this more tomorrow in chapter 5, this seal that's sealed 7 times. So then you're saying 3, verse 3 is the next one. How many verses? 3 and 4, and that's seal 2, and then 5 and 6, okay. Seal 3. What about seal 4? 7 and 8 is seal 4. What about seal 5? 9 and 10? 9 through 11. Okay. Seal 5 is 9 through 11. What about seal 6? 12 through 17 is seal 7, or 6, sorry. seal 6. That's the first step. We discover the parts. Now, I would write a little bit more here. Seal 1 is this white horse, right? White horse, and you can kind of summarize it. He's conquering, isn't he? He's there to conquer. What do we have? A horse again? Seal 2? It's a red horse. And what is he doing? He's taking peace. Good. Third horse? Or third seal is another horse, isn't it? Black. And what is the rider doing on that horse?
Balancing the scales.
Balancing the scales. Yeah. Famine. Okay. Fourth seal, do we have a horse? Pale horse. And disease? Death in Hades, disease, death, something like that. Fifth seal is a horse. No? We're done with the horses?
Souls under the altar.
Okay. We've got souls. Okay. And what about sixth seal? Are we back to horses? What do we have in the sixth seal? Got plagues. Do we have any characters? So we had horses and riders, then we have souls, and then what do we have in... Kings and men. Okay, so we got people. Okay, so again, all we've done so far is discover the parts. Now, I want to start to take step 2 together, where we're deliberating over the relationships, because we've already written down some things that we can make some observations about how the parts relate to one another. Just looking at what we've seen, what is the relationship between these six parts? What do you notice? How are they alike? How are they different?
Four horses, two groups of people.
Okay, yeah. Y'all see that? Mm-hmm. We've got common characters here, and then but then it shifts from this horse business to people. Okay? So the first four are different than the last two. Right? Mm-hmm. What else? They appear to be sequential.
When you open the seal, then when you open
Yeah. First seal, second seal, third seal. Good. What about, so the relationship, there's a series that's kind of unfolding. Very good. Anything else you notice about even how these two sections are different, two sections of verses are different from one another? Okay, good. Good. We've got this apocalyptic hearing and seeing that we're just going to keep on finding throughout the book. What about the length?
Yeah, the length. The second group is longer.
Okay. So one thing I'm wondering as I'm doing structure is when you see a pattern, a very clear pattern, seal after seal, a very clear pattern, two verses, very clear pattern, horses. When the pattern deviates, I'm starting to perk up and think that the deviation might be indicative of what's most important. So I want you to take a moment with your partner, and I want you to keep thinking about these relationships, but I want you to focus on the fifth and sixth seal and try to think about what else is in the fifth and sixth seal that makes it different than the first four. How are the fifth and sixth seals different from the first four? Look at those for the fifth and sixth seals for a moment with your partner and answer that question. All right, let's bring this back together. Before we focus on kind of what's unique about the fifth and sixth seals, because remember, the differences between the fifth and sixth seals, the difference in length, the difference in characters, the shift from horses to then people. That was an indicator to me that maybe the focus of the passage is culminating in the fifth and sixth seal. But generally speaking, like what's happening, just generally speaking, when the seals are opened? In a word, what is happening?
Judgment.
Okay. Now, how are the fifth and sixth seals, like what's the relationship between those two?
The last two are the unmediated work of God for him to be the one exercising the judgment.
Okay.
Plea for him to do it, carrying out of the wrath of the Lamb, not of a rider.
Okay. Great, great. No longer riders, now the Lord is getting personally involved. Very good. What else? Okay, five is different. In a passage of judgment, what's going on in five?
Comfort.
Asking for judgment. Asking for judgment, but who's asking? The saints. So in a passage full of God's judgment, we have the fifth seal, and these are the saved people, not the judged people, and they're praying. Is there a prayer in the sixth seal? What's the prayer in the sixth seal? Who's praying in the sixth seal? The bad guys. The good guys, the saved ones, are praying to the Lord. In the sixth seal, there's this prayer as well. And the prayer there is hide us from the wrath of the Lamb. Okay, all we're doing is deliberating over the relationships. Okay? With what we've seen so far, I want you to just... let's just do this together. Let's take step three. What would you say is just a brief emphasis for the passage? We know it's a passage on judgment, but there's this focus that happens in the fifth and sixth seals. What would you say those add to our understanding of judgment? I mean, this is a book full of judgment, isn't it? So we're going to have to say something about what Revelation 6 is really saying and about judgment. What do we learn about that? A few words. What do you think?
God will avenge his people and punish the wicked.
Great. Yeah, there is this. That's what Seal 5, I love that. God, or maybe even Lamb, is going to judge, but there's this element of it's an act of vengeance. Is that good? How we understand the judgment of the Lamb, Revelation 6 tells us, on one hand, it's going to be awful. It's just so awful that the sixth seal is saying, who can stand? But the fifth seal tells us this is an act of vengeance. Very good. All right, that's just us very briefly together going through structure. Let's go to Revelation chapter 18. Let's do another exercise. Revelation chapter 18. Okay, Revelation 18. And I'm going to, just forewarning, I'm going to ask someone to read verses 1 through 10. So somebody get ready to serve these people. Revelation 18, 1 through 10. But let me tell you as we come to it, One thing we're going to see later in the week as we go through Revelation 17, I just want to dip in real quick. At the end of Revelation 17, we have the context that tells us right before this, Babylon, this prostitute, is going to be judged by God. Okay, right before this, we're told the prostitute Babylon, this city, is being judged by God. Okay, with that in mind, someone stand. Thank you, sir. What's your name?
Spencer.
Chad and Spencer are the heroes. You're going to read verses 1 through 10. I'm going to give you a narrative tool, which is a scene shifting by characters, but specifically a speaker, when the speaker changes. So listen for speaker changes. Spencer, verses 1 through 10, please.
After this, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority. For in a single hour, your judgment has come.
Thank you very much. All right, so first thing we do is we observe. We read the passage, and if we're paying close attention, we're thinking about narrative, we're thinking about discourse. One of the options available to us to discover the parts of the passage in narrative, this feels kind of like a story. Again, something's happening. There's action and activity. One of the tools we can use is a shift in speaker. Now, did y'all hear that? Did y'all pick up on that? There's different speakers in this passage. Let's just take this first step together and discover the parts of the passage by shift in speaker. Who speaks first in chapter 18? An angel. Okay. Great. And then when does a new speaker step up? Okay, you say verse 4. So that means verses 1 through 3, we've got this first speech by an angel. Verse 4, how long does it go before there's another speaker? What is it? 9, so it's 4 through 8. And who's that speaker in 4 through 8? A voice from heaven. Great. And then you said there's a shift in 9. And what's the shift? The next speaker is Kings. And how long does that go? Till 10, the kings speak. Okay. Do y'all see that? Just three speakers. Now, we can even just start to deliberate over the relationships. What do you notice about the speakers, these three speakers? Where are they?
Two in heaven, one on earth.
Okay, so we've got heavenly speakers. The first two are in heaven. And then all of a sudden we get some earthly speakers. Y'all see that? And actually, let me just stretch this out a little bit. 9 through 20, we get these earthly speakers. We've got those kings in 9 through 10. And then what do we have in 11 through 14? Y'all see this? We've got speakers. Speakers are stepping up. Next one in verse 15. Pirates. Wow. What translation is that? All right. Merchants of the earth and then merchants of the sea, right? Or some pirates. Why are you throwing me off with that? Some other sort of merchants. And that's 15 through 18, right? And then who do we have in 19? And 20, who's speaking? What's the word that's used to?
Shipmasters and seafaring men.
Okay. So 19, I'm looking for a speaker to step up. And it says they, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if it's all of these, maybe. I think they belong together. They're earthly. Does that make sense? They. And it may be the ones right before, but the word and the structure or the signal is they, another speaker. 21, do we have another speaker? Who is it? Now we're back to heavenly witness. Mighty angel, and that carries through the end. Okay, we've discovered the parts together. Again, we haven't seen the structure until we've deliberated over the relationships. But one thing we can say about the relationships is not only do we have some heavenly speakers and some earthly speakers, and then we hear again from an angelic speaker, we have a series of speeches, and this comes right after we're told that God is going to judge the prostitute. So, a series of speakers about the death of the prostitute. I'm just going to say this is kind of like a funeral. And these are the eulogies. Is that fair? These are the eulogies at the prostitute's funeral service. Now, one of the things I notice is repetition. And it's repetition of the word for. Look in verse 3. Do you see this? Verse 3, the word for. What does it say? When the angel is talking about the death of the prostitute, it says for what? So the angel's eulogy, she died for. Here's the reason why she died. Do you see another one in verse 5? Okay, so the next angel focuses in verse 5 on something else. Okay, I want you to take a couple moments with your partner and just notice together this repetition of four in these verses. The four is kind of getting at how they feel about the death of the prostitute. So just summarize it with your partner. I'll actually divide up the reasons into three. This first row over here, the outside, you guys do 3 and 5. Look for a reason or how they feel about the death of the prostitute. This row right here, look at 10 and 14, actually. 10 and 14, okay? And this row, you're going to do 17. I don't mean to give you less. I'm not saying anything about you. You know what I mean? Spencer, my guy's over here. So you guys are going to do less, but find out the feeling of the merchants, how they feel about the death of the prostitute. And then 20 through 23, or 20 and 23, find a reason or find a feeling of the speaker. Take a couple minutes with your partner and find those. Just deliberating over relationships by noticing how people feel differently about the prostitute dying. Yeah, just to be clear, like sum up the eulogy based on what is said about four, okay? Sum up the eulogy of that speaker at the funeral. All right, let's try to share what we found. So structure, 3 steps. We want to discover the parts of the passage using a strategy, but we're not ready to discern the emphasis of the structure until we've deliberated over the relationship of the parts. So just making observations. It seems like this is a series of eulogies at the funeral of the prostitute. And each person who steps behind the mic says something a little bit different about the death of the prostitute. What did you guys find over here is what the angel is saying in 1 through 3. Well, how would you just briefly summarize the eulogy? Yeah, it's like she got what she deserved. She's like guilty of sexual immorality. She intoxicated the world. It's definitely, it's not the eulogy you expect to start any kind of funeral, at least in Texas. It's surprising to have that angel show up behind that mic. But then in Texas, you don't start this way, and you don't give any of this at the death of anybody. It doesn't matter if it's a prostitute. But the angel comes out hot. And then we got another voice from heaven in 4 through 8. What else? That was you guys as well. What's the eulogy there? How would you summarize it? Mourning. So verses 4 through 8.
Oh, sorry.
4 through 8. What did you guys, look at 4 through 8? Did I? Yeah, verse 5 was was kind of summarizing. Okay, I heard another voice from heaven in verse 4. Come out of her, my people, lest you take part in her sins, lest you share in her plagues, for her sins are heaped as high as heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. So there's not just is she guilty, but get away from her because of her sin, right? Do y'all see that? For her sins are heaped as high as heaven. Then we got this, so the angels kind of step aside, then we got this group of earthly speakers who walk up. And let's just take one of them. 9 and 10. What did you learn from verse 10, how the kings feel about this?
A shock at how quickly it came about.
Yeah. Where do you see that?
In a single hour, your judgment has come at the end of verse 10.
Yeah. They are shocked. They were so impressed with her, and yet she has gone down so quickly. Verses 11 through 14, verse 14, it's this idea that merchants are saying, look, she lost everything. She was great. She lost everything. 15 through 18, what did y'all see in 17?
Wealth has been laid
waste. Yeah. Again, these are the people who step up and they were impressed with her. That's how they're feeling. But what about what happens in the when they speak up together? They all kind of gather around the mic in verses 19 and 20 and they say something. What are they what did verse 20 kind of indicate? Is their collective eulogy? What's that? Yeah. They do have this sense that all that impressed even them about her. It wasn't worth it. And then finally, we have the mighty angel step up at the very end. And what does he say? This group over here. What is the mighty angel's eulogy? Hey guys, just so you know, this is going to go this way the whole week. Like I'll ask questions and it'll go a lot better if you answer. So you guys, give me, what does the mighty angel say?
The nations were deceived by the sorcery of the merchants.
Yeah.
Kind of done something sketchy.
Yeah. It sounds a little bit like that first angel. She's guilty. She did all this terrible stuff and now she's gotten what she deserved. All right, so that's just thinking through that second really important step. What are the relationships? What's different? What's the same? And then we need to take a step of emphasis. Let's do this together. What is the whole passage together emphasizing about the death of the prostitute? Just someone throw out a few words given and kind of reflect the idea that this is like a it's like a funeral service and everyone has certain feelings about it. And how should we ultimately feel? Good riddance. I think that's really good. She gone. Good riddance. Say goodbye to the seductress. All right. So we've just taken two strategies, repetition, and then shifts in the scene based on speakers. But then in Revelation 18, we added in repetition. So you know what? Sometimes you're going to use multiple. And hopefully they're clarifying of one another. One may give you the whole structure, but then the other may help you with relationships. We do this ultimately because we discover the structure of a text in order to discern its emphasis. We have to see the structure if we're going to get an indication of the point.